The 24th of September 2016 is a date my BBC Africa colleague Gift remembers well.
That was actually my best day that I can ever recall. I was so happy.
It was the day he married Grace.
While we were marching into the wedding hall, tears started rolling down my eyes. I had longed for that day to come.
If Gift were to pinpoint a particular highlight from a day full of them, it was probably when Grace and him did their first dance.
My wife used to be so shy, so she couldn't dance. I had to draw her close to myself, hugged her. She was just like talking to only me, telling me, you know, I can dance.
And there was this other moment that Gift savors.
When we got back to the room, I sat down, I looked into her eyes, I said, could you believe we are married?
But in 3 years, Grace would be gone. Her death accelerated by a web of misinformation and miracle cures. Hi, I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and this is The Comb. Each week I comb the African continent for stories that matter. And if you have a story suggestion, you can email me at thecomb@bbc.com. In this episode, the high price of health misinformation.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
My name is Andrew Gift. A reporter, a journalist, and I've been practicing for over a decade.
Gift is a BBC Africa colleague of mine based in Lagos.
They call me the emergency reporter in the office because I'm the type that when something is happening anywhere around my region, I'll be the first to know, and most times I'll be the first on ground to cover. And they know I don't play with my job. I so much love this profession, so...
For most of his youth, growing up in Imo State in Nigeria's southeast, Gift's life revolved around the church.
I'm actually the son of a pastor, and with time, I also got ordained. I'm a youth pastor in my church, and all through my life, I've been into this religion thing. I've been a born-again Christian for a long time. From my childhood days, I used to follow my dad to crusades. At times, he would preach in the buses, and I learned that from him. So most times, I would just board a bus and preach inside a bus.
And how old were you, Gift, when you were preaching in the bus?
I said then I was 7, 8, 9. Yeah, I was still a kid.
As the oldest son, Gift said his father had really high expectations for him. And that sometimes translated into pressure to achieve certain things and set an example for his 6 siblings, chief among them, marriage.
The first sons are always required to marry early. They are always pressurized to marry early. But in my own case, I couldn't really marry early because in the beginning, I wasn't really having the funds. Because in Nigeria, you don't just go get married. You have to fulfill certain terms. That is what we call bride price in Nigeria. You pay for the bride price of your wife.
There is a whole comb episode on the pressure to get married. You should take a listen. But in the case of Gift, the pressure was really intense and it caused relations to fray.
At the time, my longtime girlfriend had to just leave me because I couldn't raise that money to get married with her. She went ahead to get married to some other person. So the pressure was there. It was tough. It was difficult for me. At the time, my dad wouldn't pick my calls. At the time, he wouldn't call me because he wanted me to get married. My mom was the understanding type. She would call me and say, calm down with time. We'll fix this. We'll fix that. And aside my parents, friends out there, they keep preaching marriage to me. They keep disturbing me about marriage in the church, in the groups that I belong to. That was why when I finally got married, it was like a huge relief. In fact, I cried on my wedding day. Everybody was shocked. I was crying on my wedding day. I was crying.
The story of how Gift met Grace is like the plot of a rom-com. A romance that started in the most unromantic of settings, a bus terminus.
While we were in the park, I noticed the bus conductor was having some issues with a young lady at the back of the bus. I think he was asking the young lady, you need to pay for the extra luggage you're having. And the young lady was like, this is a very minor luggage. Why are you charging me? And the conductor was now intimidating the young lady. So I walked up to them.
Gift intervened. He took the conductor aside and paid the extra money. Then he told the conductor, don't say anything. An instruction the conductor promptly ignored.
And he was so happy that he has gotten his money. And he, with that happiness, he rushed into the bus and was like, better go and thank that young man over there. He has given me the money. He was now addressing the young lady. He said, go and thank the young man. He has given me the money. And the lady now turned to me. I was like, thank you. It's not that I don't have the money. I have it, but that luggage was too tiny.
The conductor became an unlikely Cupid, sparking a conversation that spanned the duration of the 8-hour bus journey. Numbers were exchanged, and then a few months later, Grace and Gift stood in front of over 500 guests and said their vows. Gift says Grace was his perfect match.
From the time I got married to her, I knew what was called happiness. I felt fulfilled. I married the kind of woman I wanted. I wanted a gentle woman. I wanted a quiet woman. And that was the kind of woman I met. Grace was also religious. She was a Christian, a committed one too. She was a choir member, a chorister. Her mom is a deaconess in the church.
About 4 months into the marriage, Grace fell pregnant. For Gift, everything was coming together.
And we were so excited our first baby was going to come.
But then Grace began to notice something.
She started having that small feeling in her breast, and we had to go check it out. She showed me, and I was like, I don't know much about this thing, so let's go check it out. We did go to check it out, and I looked at it. It was like one tiny, just less than a cube of sugar. Because at then, I remember we went to the hospital, and the hospital told us it's nothing, we should just ignore it. Because it was too tiny, it was like nothing. But with time, as the baby was growing in the tummy, the lump was also growing. That was how we eventually ended up going to a particular hospital that told us we should wait. That yes, it's a lump, but we should wait until the baby is delivered, and we will now have to confirm exactly what kind of lump it is. About a month or two after the delivery, we now went back to the hospital to now check out what actually is wrong. They now had to do a biopsy on her and took some samples and told us to come back for the results. And we did. It appeared the lump was cancerous. I felt my world falling apart that day. That was the worst news I ever had, because I know I've heard of cancer before then, but I never knew what it was all about, because it has never come around me nor anybody around me. I remember looking into my wife's eyes that day. She felt like the end has come. I had to take the baby away from her arms because I saw her just losing herself at that moment. She felt like it was the end. Tears rolled down her eyes. I tried to control my own end because I'm a man in Nigeria and Africa. Men hardly cry. I tried to hold myself, but inside me, I felt the world has come to an end, actually.
And even as Grace and Gift were adjusting to the shocking news, they had to also consider the next steps.
And what was the doctor advising in terms of treatment? What was he proposing?
One of the options was to do a mastectomy.
A mastectomy is an operation to remove a breast. It's used to treat breast cancer in both women and men. With Grace, the doctor said they should be able to construct an artificial breast.
The doctors also advised us to go for chemotherapy to try to kill any cancerous cell inside the system.
Chemotherapy is another cancer treatment where different types of chemotherapy drugs are used to kill cancer cells to stop them from reproducing, which prevents them from growing and spreading in the body.
Because after that day, I remember I went home, I started reading everything I could ever read about cancer. And after that, we went for that second opinion. The doctors there also mentioned that, yes, this is cancerous and that we should proceed immediately and conduct a mastectomy.
That was the advice from two different doctors, a mastectomy followed by a course of chemotherapy. But there was also another solution floated, to just remove the cancerous lump.
The doctor clearly told us that that was just a temporary surgery, that it won't cure the cancer. Me, I was advocating for mastectomy. My wife wasn't cool with it because she felt, my husband will not be looking at her and there will not be any breast there again. And all that, and how she fulfilled her duties to me as a woman, and all that.
Further complicating the decision-making were various figures in the church advising them to proceed with the removal of the lump. When Gift told me this, at first I didn't fully understand why church members would be asked to weigh in on such a personal medical decision. But it helped to illustrate to me how central a role the church played in their lives. So, for example, here's how a typical week for the couple would look.
We pray together in the morning. We fast. We go to church every Sunday. I even joined a choir group because of her, because I wanted to encourage her to be going to the choral rehearsals every week. We give out alms. We pay our tithes. And not just Sunday services. We go to services within the week. I think that was Tuesdays and Thursdays back then in Abuja. And we attend crusades, we attend camps, and many religious activities.
The advice for Grace to go for the lump removal option rather than the full mastectomy was coming from all sides. Church members, family members, friends. And so Grace went for it.
In about 2 weeks, the wounds from the surgery were already healed up. The lump was no longer there, but the cancer never left.
While on the surface, Grace seemed to be doing better, Gift was worried. He kept thinking back to what the doctors had said about how this was only a temporary fix. And so he kept on trying to convince Grace to proceed with the mastectomy and chemotherapy, which she finally agreed to do. But on the day the surgery was scheduled, Gift was on his way to buy the chemotherapy drugs when Grace called and said she wouldn't be proceeding with the surgery or the chemotherapy.
Why was she saying no? What had made her change her mind?
She had gotten so many calls from different people, advice from here and there, and most importantly from the church, telling her God has healed her. Why proceed with this? The matter is already settled. I remember even a sister of mine also advised her, don't go on with the mastectomy, don't go on with the chemotherapy. 50% of people who go to chemotherapy usually die during the chemotherapy process. And so many stories coming from here and there.
It's worth pointing out that the things Grace was being told aren't true. And I'll be speaking to a Kenyan oncologist about the reality of cancer treatment later in this episode. But back to Grace, who is being inundated with advice from different people.
Many others were of the opinion that she should go for local treatment, traditional treatment, like with herbs and fruits and all that. Some people were like she should avoid carbohydrate food, anything that has starch inside, she should avoid it. So many people were talking to her, but because she was too religious, once the church had told her this is this way, it sank into her mind and that was what she was hell-bent on doing.
And for you, as someone who also is religious and devout, what was that like for you trying to juggle these two worlds, trying to get your wife medical help but also understanding the religious aspect of things?
The fact is that though I was a Christian, my Christianity never said we should not take drugs or access medical care when you are sick. So I tried to use those words to convince her that, yes, you can still go to the hospital, do the necessary things, and still believe God for healing. You don't just sit back at home.
Grace had undergone that initial surgery just to remove the lump. This was now months later. What was happening?
The so-called lump appeared again, and this time it came back with full force, like it was angry. It started getting big, big and big and big. It was far bigger than what it was in the beginning. It was far bigger than what it was that we removed from inside the breast initially. And I tried my best advising her to go to the hospital. No, she said no. We tried traditional drugs, local drugs, everything that we could try. Went to religious houses. We prayed and fasted. I sowed seed. I don't know if you understand what I mean by sowing seed in the church. Where they tell you, sow a particular amount of money and we'll pray for you and God will heal you. I sowed seed here and there. I visited a lot of prophets with her. Even the popular, the late T.B. Joshua then. I remember her mom insisted I should take her to the church of T.B. Joshua. I had to go. And at the end of the whole session, when she came back, I told her, see, I've taken her to T.B. Joshua. She's still how she has been. The lump became big. It kept on growing. At the time, I was not telling Grace, this thing will burst. Let's go to the hospital. She refused.
The lump did finally burst. And I should warn you, this next part is graphic.
Because she was not hiding it. She was ashamed of telling me that what I said has happened. She kept on nursing the injury. But I perceived some bad odor in the room. And I was like, I don't understand what is smelling in this room. I didn't know how to question her because I knew that odor was coming from her body. I didn't know how to ask her, say, why is this odor coming from your body? So I told her, on this day, we are going to bed together. That was the day I found out that the breast had already busted. And she's been treating it with drugs. She would tell me, buy drugs. I'll buy the drugs. I never knew what she was listening for. Only for me to see all those stuff. It was heartbreaking. It was tough. It was painful. She refused to still go to the hospital.
When she was refusing, what was she saying? What was her case for not going?
She would tell me, God has healed me. My prophet said this. My pastor has said this. This group has told me this and that I'll be fine. I am healed. He's already healed. God has healed me. Just believe it.
But Grace was rapidly losing weight and becoming weaker. And then at around 4 a.m. one morning, Gift woke up to find that Grace had fallen off the bed and was unable to move. This time, Gift insisted they go to hospital. Grace was eventually taken into a specialist hospital, and there for the first time, she agreed to a course of chemotherapy. But by then, the cancer had spread to her kidneys, her liver, her lungs, and even her bones.
The doctor told me in a couple of months she'll be gone.
What was that like for you, this period?
I practically moved into the hospital. I lived in the hospital. Some days I would bring in my baby to sleep in the hospital bed. Sometimes the baby would sleep with me inside the vehicle, because that's where I used to sleep, inside the car. We'll sleep in the morning, we'll bath by the corner, and from there I would dress and go to work. It was tough.
Grace was in and out of hospital. But she was readmitted again one morning when she was complaining of a really bad headache. The cancer had spread to her brain. And with that came something that Gift still finds incredibly painful to talk about.
With time, she couldn't recognize me. I remember one evening I went out to buy fruits and some other things for her, brought it into the hospital, and she looked at me when I came in, and she couldn't recognize me. She was just looking at me. Tears fell down my eyes.
Gift's story is about many things. It's about devotion. Gift to Grace, Grace to her faith. but it's also about misinformation, an increasingly prevalent problem that is impossible to quantify. It might be a WhatsApp message offering advice based on something that happened to someone's aunt or cousin, or an emotive testimonial from someone hawking a homemade remedy. What's clear is that what Grace went through, as upsetting as it is not that unusual. So I'm going to pause Gift's story for a moment to hear from someone who's dealing with misinformation on a regular basis.
My name is Dr. Andrew Odhiambo, and I'm a medical oncologist as well as a lecturer at the University of Nairobi. I specialize in treatment of cancers, mainly using chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and targeted therapy.
With 12 years in the field, Dr. Odhiambo has seen firsthand the effects of cancer misinformation.
Cancer misinformation, I say it's a pandemic because it affects very many people, and not only in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, but even in the developed countries. It's a disease which is it's difficult to understand. You know, there are many cancers, over 100 different types, so it's not possible to have knowledge on all of them. So generally, if you look at the general population, they have a very poor level of knowledge of cancer compared to something like HIV or diabetes, for example. So a lot of times, patients will be given the wrong information and they will make a life-changing decision based on the wrong information. I could give you an example of cancer surgery. For very many years, many Kenyans believe that if you go for a type of surgery and the surgeon cuts the tumor, then the tumor will begin to spread. And so that's based on misinformation. How surgery has evolved over time reduces that risk to near zero. So it doesn't happen nowadays, but people still stick to that, and somebody can actually refuse life-saving surgery because of misinformation.
What other types of misinformation are you seeing in terms of remedies and beliefs?
Many Kenyans and many Africans believe that chemotherapy is the worst thing you can ever experience, as it is true not only with cancer medicines, but also other medications have side effects, but they are not as bad as they are portrayed to be. There are patients who are on chemotherapy who are functional, who are able to go to work every day, who are not having nausea, who do not lose their hair, who do not lose their fertility, and they're able to function as normal human beings, yet they are on chemotherapy. In this country, thousands of patients are getting chemotherapy every day and they're surviving the experience.
And with social media, there are also a lot of people peddling herbal remedies and other things. Why do you think people are so ready to hear about these remedies?
I guess it's for them, it's more of comforting. If somebody comes out and says, hey, you know, I have this herbal remedy, I have this supplement, I have this concoction that can cure cancer, and this is safe on the body, it's natural, we grow it in the backyard, for example, then they're more likely to lean towards something which they believe would work better towards treating the cancer.
And as a doctor, what is it like for you to see that, to watch this unfold in front of you?
It's heartbreaking, but we try. Like just last week, I got a patient also with breast cancer who 2 years ago had refused. But then now she came in, she had water in her lungs and we were able to get the water out. And we just had a 20-minute discussion and she agreed and she says, I wish I met you 2 years ago. The way you have taken time to explain this for me, I now understand that chemotherapy is not something so bad. And she's actually very happy now. The tumor is responding to the chemotherapy. And you see, that also makes you happy. So you can make a sad situation a happy one by just spending a little extra time with these patients and trying to make them understand exactly what they are getting into and that it's not the worst thing in the world.
Dr. Odhiambo says getting information to patients is key, but that can be tricky if, say, you are a doctor working at a public hospital with a line of patients snaking around the block. You might not always have the time to spend with each patient. But there are some promising initiatives that are helping to address this very issue.
We started a patient navigation system, and this is basically where you have nurses and other healthcare workers that would spend time with patients. The navigator will tell the patient, this is the chemotherapy that you're going to get, and these are the likely side effects, and this is how you can deal with them. The navigators would talk to them about a healthy diet and nutrition, how to keep active. So in between one doctor visit to another, the navigators help a lot in educating the patients, in empowering the patients to make the correct decision. And this actually sort of translated into overall better patient care, better follow-ups, there were fewer dropouts, and overall the outcomes were better.
On 24 November 2019, Grace died. She was 33.
I still live in the same house. Everything in that house still reminds me of Grace. All my clothes still reminds me of Grace, except for the new ones. I had to redecorate the house and try to push off some things. But still, everything that happens in that house, the food I eat, the water I drink, the bathroom I enter, the bed I lie on, everything around her, that house still reminds me of her.
And there is another more constant reminder of Grace, their daughter, Princess.
Any day I look at her, I'll see Grace.
Gift recently married again, but he's still struggling with what he went through. He's also still trying to reconcile with his faith.
I'm not yet back. I'm not still myself. At times I don't go to church on Sundays. At times I don't go within the whole week. At times I don't pray. At times I don't even read the Bible. At times, in fact, I've not climbed the altar to preach for one day since that incident.
It's impossible to know how things would have turned out for Grace had she undergone the medical treatment. But Gift is still angry, and often he turns that anger inwards.
Because at times I blame myself for the death of Grace. Most times I blame myself. Why is it that I had to listen to her? So for a very long time, I kept on beating myself. I've not stopped.
Give started a Facebook page to tell people Grace's story and raise awareness around cancer. And what constantly surprises him is how often he hears versions of what he went through.
Somebody called me 2-3 weeks ago and told me my friend's wife is having cancer of the breast. I was like, tell the guy to call me. They said, no, they have already taken her to the ministry. That ministry is referring to a religious house, and that they want to proceed to pray for her. The pastors has assured them by faith she will be fine and all that. Told them, no, go to the hospital. Listen to what the doctors tell you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you're listening on a platform that allows you to, then please do take a moment to leave us a review or tell a friend or two about us. It makes a big difference and I really appreciate it. This episode was produced by me, Kim Chakaneta, Mary Goodhart and Aisha Afra. Our sound design is by Rob Wilson. Our editor is Alice Mthengi. Our studio manager is Antonio Fernandez. A special thanks to Olivia Ndubisi and Namdi Kelechi Agbanelo, Rhoda Odiambo and Sylvia Chebet for their help with this episode.